Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening to The Philosophy Show, episode 138. It is May the 12th, Thursday, 2016, 12:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Same time, same place, half an hour show. It's a call-in show. Tonight's episode for The Philosophy Show is episode 138. It's called Guaranteed Annual Income, a Sea Change. No laughing matter. And this is a call-in show. If you'd like to call in, the call-in number is area code 646-929-1344. And I'm going to talk about 15 minutes here and explain this concept. And no, this is not a get-rich-quick scheme. This is something real, real deal here. Again, that call-in number is area code 646-929-1344. You can visit us at blogtalkradio.com/philosophy. And you can also visit my website. My name is Thomas at youtube.com/blastoffreshair. And this is like one of those things where you feel like it should already be happening. And it's something that you feel like is going to be inevitable anyways in the future. And kind of like, you know, he thought space travel would be happening by the year 2016, but well, there is a little bit of it, but a very little amount. But this is even, I would say, bigger than that. So the main question is why? Why, you know, when we know there's these better ways, and I'm going to go through everything here, go through the consequences, the who, what, when, where, why, and how. I'm going to brainstorm some other possibilities, define things, look for paradoxes, etc. But let's just get down to it. An article that not many people might have known about. This is from the Huffington Post, Canada edition, dated... Well, it was originally posted December 23rd, 2014. I guess it was updated December 19th, 2015. And the title of this article was, "A Canadian City Once Eliminated Poverty and Nearly Everyone Forgot About It." Let me just read you a little bit about it. Between 1974 and 1979, residents of a small Manitoba city were selected to be subjects in a project that ensured basic annual incomes for everyone. For 5 years, monthly checks were delivered to the poorest residents of Dauphin, Manitoba, no strings attached. And for 5 years, poverty was completely eliminated. The program was called MinCom, like a neologism of minimum income, and it was the first of its kind in North America. It stood out from similar American projects at the time because it didn't shut out seniors and the disabled from qualification. They just wanted to evaluate, see how that worked. The conservative government took over in 1977 and federally in 1979, had no interest in implementing the project more widely. Now they're telling the story about one person. Says here, Richardson, who is now 87 and still lives in Dauphin, says only three or four of the city's original MinCom recipients remain among the Prairie community's 8,251 residents. During the program's heyday in the mid-1970s, Richardson was a mother of six. Three of her children lived at home. To earn money, she ran a small salon out of her home called Fifth Avenue. But let's see what the results of this were. I'm going to skip through this article. Let's see here. In 5 years, Mincom helped 1,000 Dauphin families who fell below the poverty line earn a livable income. When the project ended, locals didn't make a fuss because they knew the checks were temporary anyways. And let's see here. So for an individual, they were paid about $16,000, and a family of two, about $20,000 in 2014 dollars compared to $1975 dollars. But basically, I mean, this is a long article, and let me just skip down to the results here. And also, there's some other countries like Scotland, Switzerland, Namibia, Uganda, India. Those are some countries that we're looking at it. And so you can read this article, but basically everyone, no one became lazy. People got second jobs and we're still working during getting this, and they were more productive and et cetera. What you might not know is Milton Friedman, the, you know, libertarian, supported a negative income tax, which is very similar, saying like, and he said that it would save taxpayers, and this was back like in the 1960s or something, but or the 70s, 72% of the current welfare budget spent on administration. So let's go through the pros and cons, if you will, here. And in Switzerland, actually, let me just give you one other article. This is from the independent.co.uk. The article titled is Switzerland will be the first country in the world to vote on having a national wage of $1,700 a month in euros, which is even more. The plan would cost the government around 208 billion Swiss francs a year. And this is dated January 2016. And you can look that up, but let me get to my points here and see if, all right, what we got going on here. All right, so this is called the guaranteed annual income. Some people might call it a minimum income. And so what is this? And who is this for? It should be for you, me, anyone. And what are the consequences? Let's go into that, the pros and cons of consequences, all right? But first, I'm going to go through in order who, what, when, where, why, and how. So let's start with who, and that's us. What is a guaranteed annual income? It also is, I'm going to make the argument here, more capitalist than what we have now, more socialist than what we have now. It's a fair system option, and I'll explain that. And it's the best option. When? Yesterday. Where? In the U.S., and I hope every country adopts this. Now, here's the why, and this is where we really get into it. The money is generated from the bottom up instead of the top down, because keep in mind, what we're talking about here is already happening, but it's happening to, like, the top 1% or the... You know, and actually about half of all government spending is government contracts and paying private sector, picking winners and losers in the marketplace. I mean, they don't pick you, but I'm sure you would love to get a nice contract to do someone. I mean, you could just skim 1% of it and pay someone else to do it if you have the right connections, right? So, I mean, it really is, if it's for a lot of money, I mean, it could be like an advantage. Not really welfare, but like kind of a cheat. Because if you don't get it, what is money? What is the definition of money? Well, it's a lot of different definitions. It's something to exchange in place of, like, it's something to measure exchange, I guess, to keep tabs of value, something to negotiate with. It's also something, it's by percentage. It's also something that is a percentage of what you have or what anyone has versus everyone else. So all inflation does is reduce your percentage. In other words, it could. When money is held out of the markets, that could cause a shortage of cash. There's a lot of things people could do to manipulate the markets and play with the value of your dollar. And that's why even if there's a limited supply of gold, you could always just, it would just go by smaller and smaller percentages, but people could hoard it. I guess they could build capital, and we'll go on the pros and cons of that as well. And so let me give some of the other whys. It removes a lot of waste, like Milton Friedman said, because imagine what if you could trade two things. Let's say let's have the guaranteed annual income, and let's say it's like $15,000 or $17,000 a year or $19,000 a year, something like that. I mean, we already have a census, so everyone who's like above 18, every individual, if you have the right to vote, if you're a citizen, this is how the money is created in the economy. It's created from the bottom up, not from the banks where all the money is created, where it comes from a loan, basically, or just a giveaway from the government. It comes from a loan, which has interest. So employers loan money, and the money is created through loans a lot of the times, and through government contracts and stuff like that. So it all trickles down from there, from the banks. They loan an employer money, and the employer pays the employees and then gets profits from other companies to pay back the loan. And there's winners and losers, and it's like total musical chairs. And now, I did say this is more capitalist and more socialist and is the fairest. It's a public option. That's very important. It's a voluntary public option. It's a public option, though, that has the transparency and accountability of being public and having elected people vote on it. And it's the best option, I think. It comes from the bottom up. So if banks want to make money, they can hold your cash, because if you got a guaranteed annual income, let's say $19,000 a year, then you could get rid of the minimum wage, couldn't you, at that point? So that would free up businesses for the minimum wage. Just bam, get rid of the minimum wage. You could get rid of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. You could get rid of all the poverty programs, basically, because now you've given people a minimum amount. Now, not to say you can't have public options. You could have a public Medicare, public health clinics, and some of those could also be funded with a public banking system. This is how we would have to do it, is having a public banking system. I mean, what are public options? These are things that are in the commons, like water, fire departments, judicial system, military. These are things that are the public, not making shoes, not making iPads, none of that. These are commons. It's just common sense. I don't think I even have to explain that. But and sometimes there's a public option that can compete, as long as it's voluntary and it pays for itself, like the post office. It sells enough stamps to keep itself solvent completely, and it has extra money left over. So that's my idea of a public option. And with this guaranteed annual income, I mean, we could have public clinics. They could be a lot better and more state-of-the-art, too. Like, why couldn't we buy publicly with collective bargaining some big equipment and let people use the most high-tech equipment by paying $50 a shot or something? So there's lots of different ways to approach that. I mean, why have insurance at all, really? Isn't insurance kind of like, that's like a government almost. But if people wanted to open up their own insurance companies and could offer something better, then go for it. Yes, they should be able to. There should be equal competition. The public option is there as a public option. It's just people getting together as a collective and deciding to do that. Now, I do believe, to make this principally sound, you do allow people to opt out. They can live amongst everyone else. They're just opt out. Allow them to barter if they want. It's not going to hurt anything. Oh, by the way, besides getting rid of the minimum wage, all these different departments with the guaranteed annual income, you just completely get rid of taxes, because if it's going to be generated from the bottom up, then you might as well just take out how much needs to be taxed. But if you had a public bank with a guaranteed annual income, then different departments that need to be funded, like the military, you could either pay taxes on your guaranteed annual income, but that would be, you know, monotonous. Why not just pay directly? And if you think this is pie in the sky, this is already happening. It's just, instead of 90% of the people getting it first, it's other people. And so if banks want to store your money, they will have to give you a good option, and then you'll decide, you'll still want to use banks to, you know, you don't want to keep things under a mattress, and then they'll use that money, and then they'll lend it out to other people that have an entrepreneurial thing. Just because you're getting a guaranteed annual income doesn't mean you can't have another job, or there won't be goods and services that need to hire people and stuff. And in fact, it's like voting, each person one vote. It guarantees opportunity, but it does not guarantee results. And this is how it's more capitalist, is you don't have to take the galactic credits if you don't want to, but I think most people will, who will want to trade in the economy. And this will be transparent, and it will prevent inflation, because the amount of money that's generated is per each person by the census. And so there isn't going to be any more than that money supply in the market, unless if it's bartering or if you're trading in gold, which if you want to do that, just like you can now, there's nothing preventing people from bartering or trading with baseball cards or gold coins or whatever they want. I don't see that really hurting anything, and that's not really a huge market. And if it becomes efficient, then it probably deserves to. So no problem with that, and the public option living side by side. And I have a feeling that most people would like a public option that's accountable to elected representatives. And so it's completely transparent, and you know, the accounting is all there. And you would set aside certain amounts, percentages of the population, to go towards the military, and those would all be voted on as well. It would be a really strong dollar. We would get rid of so much government waste. I mean, get rid of taxes and, you know, all these departments that are like welfare. And we wouldn't need that anymore. So it removes a lot of waste. I mean, Milton Friedman said like 70% of waste. It rewards the right people. People are still going to get rich. If you're like a software developer or Bill Gates, Microsoft founder, and you're selling the Windows operating system, people are still going to pay for that, and you're still going to get rich, and you're still going to be able to build up capital to do, you know, research and, you know, and analysis and stuff like that. That's still what would prevent that from still happening. There's still people getting rich. It's just going to be from the bottom up, and the markets, people will be rewarded. So there's nothing preventing people from getting rich. Again, it more or less guarantees income or opportunity in a way without all the red tape, but it still lets you sleep at night knowing that you're taking care of the poor, and no one will starve. There'll be a lot less crime. It'll be a lot more peaceful, and people will feel more free to do stuff. And I also think everyone should deserve at least two opportunities to get a loan to start their own business. And maybe they'd have to be like 10 or 15 years apart. But sometimes you try, sometimes you fail. And, you know, or every 15 years or something like that, you can, I mean, from the public bank, but if there's others willing to lend you, they'd be totally free to. So I think something like that would be good as well, and there'd be a lot of inventiveness and creativity. I mean, to me, it's a time, it's something that its time will eventually come. I mean, if you look at the future, this is the smartest way, and I don't see any drawbacks. I can't believe it's not being talked about. Now, there are some organizations that do. I've seen some interviews with people like Richard Cook. And you can visit youtube.com/publicbankingTV and look up Richard Cook. There also is the There's a website about public banking, the U.S. Basic Guarantee Income Network, and there's also, org. So, I mean, there are efforts to make this more known, because I think if it is, it's just the idea that's the most dominant. And as long as you make the argument that it's completely voluntary, and this is the way the government should work as a public option, and it's going to be so popular, you don't have to hold a gun to people's heads to want to do it. I think most people will want this, like an overwhelming majority. Most people don't want to live in anarchy, but if people want to opt out, they can. And, you know, I mean, libertarians are about 1% of the population, and yeah, let them opt out and let them trade amongst us. I mean, who cares? And most, you know, you get confidence in something by its voluntariness. And so it controls inflation. It's transparent, accountable. It's voluntary. It removes waste. It rewards the right people. It's fair, or the most fair. It's from the bottom up. Guarantees opportunity, not results. You don't have to worry about people starving, and, you know, there'll be less crime in the streets. Now, you do allow competing currencies. It's not forced. There'll still be banks around, and there'll still be other public options. Now, how would you get something like this done? Well, you'll have to elect people, so you have to get involved in your local elections. Voting for independent and third-party candidates. I mean, it just have to start with 1 year. Maybe there'll be a couple independents added to the Congress every 2 years. There's an election cycle for the House of Representatives, and then maybe 2 years after that, there'll be like 10, and there'll be like 50. And even if there's 50, I mean, I think that will change the conversation. Or there'll be an awakening and people will just bring this up on every radio talk show, learn the issues before they debate someone with it. Feel free to call in and we can talk about it. I mean, it's just common sense. This is already happening, by the way. It's just going in the reverse to the top. Some people are just hogging it all up. And it's just a real crooked, crony way of doing it. And changing some of the voting systems, like in Switzerland, they voted on it. In Canada, they already tried it in Manitoba, and I think they've tried it some other places. Now, there's two ways to change voting, really. I mean, now the public financing of elections, you know, I think the most important thing is allowing debates for anyone who has to win and allowing them in there, not by what they're polling at, but if they're on enough ballots where they could statistically win, then the debates will determine the polls as much as the polls determining the debates. And, I mean, about 44% or 45% of this country are independents or not. No party affiliated, not a Republican or Democrats. That's the largest block, you know. So, I mean, the numbers are already out there. And if you have a good idea that, like, you know, I can't shake this idea out of my head, I hope it happens in my lifetime, it would be the most conservative, the most liberal, it would be a renaissance. I think rank voting is something to look about. You can visit either fairvote.org, or some people call accurate voting or approval voting better. And approval voting is like rank voting, but instead of voting for someone like who you'd like in first, second, or third, and if the third place person got the most votes, then they would actually win. You would just, it's a little simpler and it can work with existing voting machines. You just vote for everyone on the ballot that you'd like to win, and then whoever has the most votes wins. It's pretty much the same principle. That's something that could help. So I think that's the two main things. I mean, changing the paradigm, you know, if you see this as totally common sense. There's absolutely no reason. I mean, like, you're thinking, like, there's got to be some catch or something. This just couldn't work. I've thought about it long nights for months, years. I've tried to crack it open and take it apart. And, I know, just listen to this. I've given evidence as well. Some other things I think that is a reform we need in the future. I'll just mention a couple real quick, is ending the wars, trying to trade with other countries, growing up, acting like adults, ending the drug wars, open up lands for homesteading where there's lots of land out there. And if people are just using it for homesteading and having solar, let them have it without paying any property tax or having to pay for it, and that would help a lot of people. Let them build, grow food on it like a farmer. What's wrong with that? And be self-sustaining. That's what people used to do, and it'd probably be healthy. And, not to say there shouldn't be grocery stores. If we had a public banking system, we could do reparations, $100,000 to each person that's a descendant. I think, I already mentioned election reform, public options like the post office, and freedom, the Constitution, and the environment for the freest market that there could possibly be is what I just described here. It showed the public option coexisting with capitalism, and, somewhat capitalism is important because there are some ventures that do require saving up of capital so you can invest hugely in research and stuff like that. And sometimes individuals outside the government framework are going to think of ideas that others wouldn't, like Nikola Tesla or someone like that, and we don't want to stop people from doing that. So that is capital, and capital is kind of the same thing in a society. When you say, like, it's kind of like a college football, like a team that's like the top 10, they're going to stay there because once they have that foundation, they're going to draft the best people, and it's going to be a perpetual thing. It's really going to take someone creative to beat that. And so I believe in saving up capital and capital of knowledge. Do you know why pretty much the technology was the same all the way up until the Renaissance? The printing press, about 200 years ago, when technology really started to boom with phonographs, photographs, telephones, submarines, guns and, everything, nuclear weapons. We have 90 seconds. Is because the capital of knowledge, you're able to save up and build capital instead of having to start over from scratch. And so, yes, but also people inheriting it, like people that inherit billions, they do have an unfair advantage. And anyways, these are just some thoughts here. So something to think about. We have 60 seconds remaining, and this has been another episode of Philosophy Show. Thank you for listening. And guaranteed annual income. Spread the word. Listen to this. Go through the arguments. Tell me what, if anything, that I'm missing, and we'll talk to you next week. All right.
There were some clouds, they were rolling through the sky, and they brought down all the rain. And there was a puddle that became a pond as it gathered up so much rain. Little seed close by grew into a tree as it soaked up.